the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. I wrote an article earlier today entitled The Travail of Tiger Woods, Lessons Not to Be Missed. We're going to be talking more about this later in the week, but one of the points I make about the current controversy, scandal related to Tiger Woods, is an amazing insight, I think, into our culture right now, and that is the fact that adultery is still a big deal. I mean, that's one of the interesting sidelines to all that's going on. It's not just about Tiger Woods the brand. It's not just about Tiger Woods the man. I've written a very extensive article about the larger picture here in terms of its moral outlay and landscape. You'll find that at albertmohler.com. But today we're going to take a very tight focus on one issue. And by the way, the background of this is not only the controversy about Tiger Woods, but a study that came out just recently indicating that one of the reasons why, indeed, this article goes so far as to say the main reason why men in particular get involved in extramarital affairs is they have the opportunity. In fact, this study says it is the sheer opportunity that often leads men into adultery. Now, that's not to reduce in any way the moral responsibility. It's indeed to push the moral responsibility back to the next issue, which is we as Christians, and in particular as Christian men, have a responsibility to eliminate opportunity. That's going to be the topic of our conversation today, the moral responsibility to eliminate opportunity. We live in a sinful world, and in a fallen world, there is plenty of opportunity all around us for sin. But when we allow an opportunity for certain very specific sins, in this case, the sin of adultery, when we allow that opportunity to develop, we bear the moral responsibility for adultery long before it happens. And it's not just, of course, about men and adultery, although this pattern is now very well documented. It's about all of us as Christians understanding that a part of our responsibility as believers is to eliminate certain opportunities because we simply need to cut them off so that they are not a temptation. We need to establish the boundaries and the principles and regulations of our lives so that we have the structures to protect us lest we also fall. And it's really interesting because I can almost guarantee you that this is not a discussion that makes a great deal of sense to the secular mind, especially in terms of workplace relationships and all the rest. I'm going to be talking to you about some of the things I've observed just in the last several years, and much of that by tragic observation. But I'll tell you, in the Christian world, this is really, really important. It's really important because it's a matter of our gospel witness. It's a matter of our Christian integrity. It's a matter of honoring the marital vows that we make. It's a matter of honoring our responsibility as spouses. It's a matter of honoring our responsibility as believers. And we're going to be talking also about the fact that it's about honoring our responsibility as parents. One of the most significant things that parents need to do is, well, you could just say parent, but in particular, it is to establish protections in the lives of our children, and especially perhaps teenagers, to remove opportunity. And that might be controversial. It might be, at first glance, unwelcome. It might be resisted. But, hey, that's why you're the parent. And we're going to be talking today about why that matters. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We need to make certain we don't miss the opportunity to learn something here. It's not just about our culture, not just about Tiger Woods, not just about the media, not just about the sports world, but it's about us. And it's about our responsibility. The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're glad to hear from you by email. Write us at mail@albertmohler.com. And you can also, of course, find all kinds of ways to communicate with us by social media. At Facebook, it is the Albert Mohler Program. And at Twitter, /Albert Mohler. And also Mohler Radio. We'll get to that issue in just a moment. In the meantime, you want to take a look at my article. It's published at albertmohler.com. It's entitled The Travail of Tiger Woods, Lessons Not to Be Missed. Speaking of not to be missed, last week was a very significant anniversary. It hardly seems like it's been just a year, but it was just a year ago last week that the sons of Bernard Madoff heard their father make a stunning confession when he told them in a very unexpected way, according to what we know, that he'd been involved in a massive fraud, Ponzi scheme, and securities fraud that has led to one of the largest collapses, financially speaking, in world history. One of the largest financial schemes in world history. As the Financial Times says, 1 year ago, Bernard Madoff made a confession to his sons that dealt a devastating blow to investors already battered by the financial market meltdown. A Ponzi scheme, otherwise known as a pyramid setup, was what he was about. And, of course, when it fell, the fall of that house was very great. It was estimated that it was a multiple billion-dollar loss. Now, according to the Financial Times, the latest estimate of true losses is higher than originally thought. And it might be that it is now about $19.4 billion lost. Just 6 months ago, it was thought that it was $13 billion. Now, $19.4 billion. There are many things that have been learned. One of the lessons of this particular scandal is that the fraud now, we know, began far earlier than was expected. You can't just come up with a Ponzi scheme in the middle of something. It is there in the beginning. At some point, Bernie Madoff decided that the only way to grow his fund was to start taking money in and paying out literally what he said were investment returns, when actually it was just new equity coming into his fund. That works as long as it works. But, of course, it can't work for long. That's one of the great moral lessons in this. That's why every Ponzi scheme fails. That's why it appeals to very base motives of greed. But just to be honest, when I look at people who castigate those who were investing with Bernie Madoff, my guess is that almost everyone making that criticism would have been glad to have been able to get in on one of the Madoff funds when things were going well just a matter of 2 or 3 years ago. One of the big issues that is now before us is, of course, that Bernie Madoff pled guilty and was sentenced to what will amount to a life term. The 71-year-old is now living out the rest of his days in a North Carolina prison. But those who lost, and some people lost just about everything, are now in a position where it's unlikely they will get much back. It's a reminder to us of the very temporary and fragile character of human wealth. It's a reminder to us of the reality of human sin infecting every dimension of our lives and, of course, our economic lives as well. And it's also a reminder of how inadequate human justice at its very best is. You could lock up Bernie Madoff for not only his lifetime and the remainder of it, but for a million lifetimes, and it wouldn't add a single cent to those who lost everything by his financial fraud. As I said in beginning this, it seems to me almost impossible that it was just a year ago that all this broke. But last week, a year ago, is when all of a sudden the name Bernie Madoff became a household name. And by the way, just thinking of how things can be reversed in a short amount of time, Bernie Madoff was considered a financial genius one moment and a fraud the next. Governor Mark Sanford in South Carolina was discussed a year ago as a very real prospect for the Republican presidential nomination in the next cycle. And just in the last few days, of course, his wife sued for divorce, given his very, very scandalous adultery. And, of course, in the situation of Tiger Woods, the topic of my article today, you've got a reverse just a couple weeks ago. One of the world's most respected persons, not only sports personality, but one of the most recognized names and illustrious brands. And now, just in the period of 2 weeks, everything can change. Lots of lessons there that we must not miss. Speaking of must not miss, in the Wall Street Journal, Brad Wilcox, often a guest on this program, professor of sociology at the University of Virginia, director of the National Marriage Project, in the Wall Street Journal on Friday had a very interesting article. The title of it is, Can the Recession Save Marriage? Well, he's not actually suggesting that a recession can save marriage, but he is pointing out something very interesting, and that is that we do know something, and that is that debt is correlated with divorce. And the bottom line of this is that when there is less debt, there is often a stronger marriage. It goes so far that Brad Wilcox says it is debt that corrodes the marital bond. Debt can be death for marriage. Very, very interesting. Perhaps there are some couples who are saying, you know, we need to watch our debt as a way of removing a matter of possible subversion of their own marriage. And, you know, that, again, is a good demonstration of taking responsibility to remove opportunity for sin. That's the topic of our conversation today. Maybe avoiding debt is the way of avoiding sin for some people. But when it comes to sexual sin, and particularly when it comes to adultery, we do bear a special responsibility to eliminate the opportunity. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the fact that America still considers adultery to be a big deal. I think that's good news in itself. We'll talk about why that's so. And we'll talk about why it is our responsibility as Christians to remove the opportunity for sin. And the failure to do that is a pathway into sin. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Live from Louisville, Kentucky, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. My article today is entitled The Travail of Tiger Woods, Lessons Not to Be Missed. You'll find it at my website at albertmueller.com. I list three lessons. The center of those lessons is that evidently adultery is still a big deal to the American people. I talk in that article about why it's so. And we'll be talking about that more on Thursday of this week. But today, I want to get to a study that was cited in light of this. The study tells us, frankly, what we already know. Sharon Jason, writing in USA Today, an article entitled Why Some Men Keep Cheating, says that there are two major issues. Number one, a feeling of entitlement. But number two, the big issue, the biggest of all, is opportunity. Todd Shackelford of Florida Atlantic University suggests that what you have are persons who men in particular, who simply see an opportunity and take it. I'm reading here from the article. For men, he says, it's all about opportunity. And for celebrities, athletes, and others in the public eye, it's all about having the money to cheat, traveling away from home and having strangers throw themselves at you. Here's a statement he made, quote, sheer opportunity is the single best predictor of men's being unfaithful. It's really that straightforward, end quote. So there you have a secular source telling us, just as a matter of his own scientific, sociological observation, that sheer opportunity is the best predictor of a man being unfaithful. And I'll just tell you, that comports with everything I know, even from Scripture. You know, Paul writes in the book of Romans about sin seizing the opportunity. And when we give sin the opportunity, well, we bear responsibility for the sin that follows. You know, the bottom line is what I often say to young men, older men too, for that matter, but I just happen to teach a lot of younger men. And that is this. If you're never alone with a woman who's not your wife, you won't commit adultery, period. It won't happen. Now, that won't say you'll never be involved in any sexual sin, but that sin you can limit because it's going to take you and a woman in a room, okay? If that doesn't happen, it isn't going to happen. And that's why young pastors have to come up with very clear principles and structures that they will follow for their own protection. And I would say this to any husband, not just a young minister, but to any Christian man. You've got to have certain principles in place. If you're not a pastor worrying about someone coming in for counseling, then you're going to be a person out in the working world who's got to worry about who's going to show up at a business dinner. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Chad's listening to WFIA. What are you thinking, Chad?
Yeah, it just was exactly with what you're going on. My wife and I have adopted three simple rules for life that we just we live and abide by, and it's never mess with anybody's money, spouse, or ego. And that's exactly what, as far as messing with someone's spouse, we never allow ourselves to be alone with a person of the opposite sex. And it's been great. We've been married for 6 years, and it's been that temptation can't be there if you're not alone with somebody else. So exactly what you were just saying.
Chad, very good point. I appreciate you sharing that. You know, what you said is straightforward and understandable, but I can tell you, I hear kickback to that all the time. And my wife, in speaking to young women in the same way, also gets the same kind of kickback where people say, well, you're just acting like you're suspicious that everyone who's alone with a person of the opposite sex will commit adultery. Well, you know, I'm not pleading exactly not guilty to that. Which, in other words, I've read Genesis 3, and I've been involved in ministering long enough to know that opportunity is itself a morally dangerous, morally responsible position. You put yourself in a position of opportunity, all kinds of things can happen. And, you know, the least thing is this. You're not in a position to say with authority what didn't happen. And that's just not a strong moral position to be in. But I'll tell you, it really is even more than that, because, you know, the bottom line of this is really easy to understand. If you cannot commit adultery, you will not. And when you consider the stakes, just ask Tiger Woods right now. Ask any number of other millions of men who will give you a similar testimony. It's that important. If you give sin the opportunity, then you're responsible for it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'll tell you, I find some reassurance in the fact that Americans still think adultery is a big deal. I think it's a big deal that they do. And in spite of the fact that we're living in this postmodern age where so many people have bought into a relativistic morality, when we've been watching a sexual revolution before our eyes, when we've seen things like premarital sex lose their stigma in the larger secular society, it's interesting that, have you observed this? No major figures come forth to say what Tiger did is not morally significant. No one's come forward to say adultery is not a big deal. I find that very interesting. And in a secular age, when it comes to even the media and others dealing with this, I'll tell you, I think there's one reason why, and that is the institution of marriage is itself a definitive moral statement. And when you take those vows, you know, Americans may be confused about any number of things, but they do understand one man and one woman in a monogamous relationship. They understand that. And at least when it comes to the marital vows of exclusivity, people still think it's wrong. Now, again, we've been subverting marriage right and left, certainly into the to death do we part. But when it comes to the issue of adultery, I think it's very significant. If you just watch and look, if you're attentive to what's going on here, no one's come forth to say this is no big deal. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about lessons not to be missed. And in particular, the lesson of eliminating opportunity. Now, just to be very specific here, Tiger Woods lived a very insular life surrounded with protection and privacy. That privacy added to the fact he was on the road and had women who obviously were ready to give sexual favors to him, put him in a situation that he is morally responsible for allowing. And that is that he wasn't surrounded by team members like what you would find in other sporting contexts. He was not living his life out in public, and I'm sure there are good reasons why he felt he shouldn't. But in private, he didn't have the protections he needed. In private, you know, outside public view, he did not have the kind of protections he needed to keep him from doing this. And there's a lesson there for all of us to learn. I find it very interesting. Again, I think this straightforward statement found in USA Today by Todd Shackelford, professor at Florida Atlantic University, he said, given his research, for men, it's all about opportunity. And he says this, quote, sheer opportunity is the single best predictor of men's being unfaithful. Look at it. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Jackie's listening in WTLN. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hi. I feel like, yeah, opportunity is not the only thing. It also takes the will to sin. You know, if he knew better, you know, will is, you have to have a will to do it. Even though the opportunity presents itself, you don't always have to take it. But if you have the will, then hey.
Yeah, I know. Jackie, I'll say I'm glad for your call, but I'll also say that allowing the opportunity is an act of the will, too. When we allow it, when we fail to put the protections in our lives that we need, that's also an act of the will. It's kind of like someone who's doing her best or his best to diet, but keeps kind of hanging around the bakery. You know, I'll tell you the truth. The only way I can keep from eating some stuff is to make sure it's not in the house. Because if it's in the house, I find it far more difficult not to eat it. And when it comes to adultery, it turns out that there's a male pattern discernible even by secular researchers, which is you give a man the opportunity and he's far more likely to take it. I'd like to really reverse that logic and say if he doesn't have the opportunity, guess what? He's not going to do it. And we are morally responsible for the opportunities we allow ourselves. And the lesson of Tiger Woods in that respect is one we all need to look and listen and observe very carefully. When we come back, I'm going to talk about how parents as well as spouses have a big responsibility here. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Miller Program. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about a deeper moral consideration of the issue of adultery, especially the key insight that is offered us that many men commit the sin of adultery because they can, because of opportunity. I was quoting from the professor Todd Shackelford of Florida Atlantic University, who says, quote, "Sheer opportunity is the single best predictor of men's being unfaithful. It's really that straightforward," end quote. And one of the issues that I think we really have to face is that opportunity is a morally significant category. When we allow ourselves the opportunity, we allow ourselves to be vulnerable to this sin. To allow ourselves the vulnerability is basically to remove the defenses, and we know how the pattern of sin works. Sin does seize the opportunity. We allow the opportunity, we're responsible for allowing the opportunity. In this fallen world, we're going to find ourselves in enough situations in which the opportunity is not one we can prevent when it comes to different kinds of sin. But, you know, it's the wise man, the wise Christian man, who learns to limit and to deny himself that opportunity. If you've got a real problem with financial integrity, don't go work in a bank. If you've got a real problem with anger, then you're going to have to get yourself in a situation where you're not subjecting yourself to what triggers it all the time. If you've got a real issue with lust, well, let me tell you what, you probably can't work at the mall. If you've got a problem with adultery, and by the way, if you're a man who thinks you don't have that problem, you're lying to yourself in terms of the moral susceptibility to it, then you just can't allow yourself to be alone with a woman who's not your wife. That's just a good principle for every single Christian man, period. Don't be alone with a woman who's not your wife. And I'm already getting email coming back, well, what about dating and courtship? Well, again, there need to be very clear Christian boundaries and structures of accountability and protection in the dating and courtship situation for unmarried Christian people who are aiming at marriage. And that gets to the issue that I announced as we're going into the break, and that is parental responsibility. You know, we talk about internet dangers and all the rest. One of the things I point out is that parents really have to be the heavy in this and say, we're not going to have an internet accessible computer in the kid's bedroom. It's just not going to happen. It's going to be in a public place. It's going to be in a family place, and it's going to be accessible. You need to have the right kind of software on it. You need to have the right kind of tracking on it. You need to have the right kind of protections on it. You need the right kind of accountability. And you say, well, that's being very suspicious about my teenage son. Well, I hope you are. Take it from one who once was one. That's just built into human nature. And the internet becomes the great opportunity cesspool. Never before have human beings been confronted with so much just a few clicks away. Again, you give the opportunity, you have to expect that opportunity will become something far more dangerous at some point. I just want to quote this again from Professor Shackelford. Sheer opportunity is the single best predictor of men's being unfaithful. It's really that straightforward. That's coming from a secular observer. Documented in terms of the psychological and sociological science that he's been doing. You ask men why they had an affair, they'll say, because they could. And when you look at the lifestyle of Tiger Woods, it's easy to understand now how this vulnerability took place. We know things we didn't know before. But there are all kinds of businessmen who are out on the road doing the work of providing for their families, spending lots of nights in hotels and, eating lots of meals alone. You know, what kind of structures of protection are built into your life? If you need to think that through, you need to get with some Christian brothers real quick and think through how can I put the right kind of protections in my life? There are people who in work relationships now have people of opposite gender involved in all kinds of working relationships. How are you going to handle that? Who's going to ride with whom? Who's not going to ride with whom? How are you going to handle this just in terms of matters as routine for people as going out to dinner, and then, of course, as specialized as perhaps being involved in counseling in a Christian context. These are issues that are very real life. What are you going to do with a teenager and the internet? what are you going to do with your young people and your teenagers and courtship and dating? You know, who's going to put in the structures of accountability? You know, you just can't imagine, for instance, saying, here's someone with a drug problem, let's set them loose in the pharmacy. Here's someone with a problem with integrity of finance, let's put them in charge of the bank. And yet, we take people whom we know are sinners with a sex drive that is just as corrupted by sin as every other part of their lives and say, let's put them loose in postmodern America. No, it won't work. You need the boundaries. If you don't deny the opportunity, you're putting yourself at risk of not denying the sin. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The whole issue of opportunity is one of those morally significant categories that escapes a lot of attention. You know, in the secular world, there are people who probably would be, I think dismissive is probably a mild word concerning our concern here. They would simply say, you people are neurotic. You people are suspicious. You people are paranoid of sin. Well, to face sin seriously is to understand the consequences of sin, the very heart of sin, and what it does, not only in terms of damage to human relationships, damage to personal reputation, damage to all kinds of good and precious things, but also the fact that it's an act that separates us from our Creator. It literally cuts us off from our very ground of being. It is a denial of the very purpose for which we were made. And thus, it just is this great toxicity that comes into our lives. To understand sin is to understand that you better be almost paranoid about it. Not in the sense of being immobilized. Martin Luther, the great reformer, was very clear about that. You can't let the possibility of sin immobilize you. Because God did not call us just to sit around spending all our time figuring out how not to sin. But the wise, prudent, responsible, mature Christian just naturally and strategically, not only alone but in conversation with others, especially spouse and then also family members and ultimately the church, puts certain protections into the life to prevent certain things from happening. And adultery is one of those certain things we must take responsibility to make sure it does not happen. Teresa wrote it on Facebook saying the most obvious answer is you never, ever put yourself in a situation where you are alone with a member of the opposite sex. I'm sure she means other than your spouse. And and we're talking here, obviously, about the context of adultery. If you forbid yourself the opportunity, there are going to be people who are going to say, you know, that's just being overly protective. Don't you trust yourself? Well, you know, this is where the Apostle Paul really comes in handy, because the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 7 makes very clear the last person he trusts is Paul. This is a man who was trained, had every great moral influence in his life, was instructed by the law, was a Pharisee, that is a member of the sect in Judaism that sought to hold itself to the highest moral standards. And the Apostle Paul said, but no matter what I did, I found myself still sinning in ways that caused him just the tremendous grief of falling short of his own expectations of righteousness. You know, Paul says, what I set myself not to do, I see myself doing. I find this law at work within me. He uses the very language, sin seizing the opportunity. And that's why we have to deny ourselves the opportunity. If you are never, and this is the point being made here, if you're never alone with a woman, not your wife, mister, you won't commit adultery. That's not to say you won't sin and you are not a sinner, but it is to say we can and should, we must put the structures in our lives to keep us from those sins. And parents, when it comes to young people, I mean, that's one of the main things. You know, being ready to discipline on the other side of sin, that's a very important parental responsibility. But preventing sin on the front end and keeping our kids, our young people, our children from sin, that's very, very important. And also teaching them how to put those structures of accountability in their own lives, that's just as necessary. And that's one of the great lessons. We're going to be talking about this more on Thursday. I'm going to have some dear friends in here who are going to be talking about the lessons of this entire situation. But one of the key issues for us is the lesson of the responsibility to protect ourselves and to protect our loved ones, to protect our marriage, to protect those whom we love just in this way. And when it comes to adultery, I'd have to say that's one of the easiest ones to avoid. I think there are other sins that are probably a lot harder to avoid. It's a lot harder to get away from food to avoid gluttony. It's a lot harder to get away from the things that might cause you to be angry. It's a lot harder to get away from the things that might cause you to covet. But quite frankly, when it comes to adultery, there are protections you can put in your life. Far easier than dealing with lust, which is, of course, the open door to adultery. Lust is something that it takes no one to bring to you. But adultery takes another human being, and that's something you can prevent. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It is interesting to look at the literature where people try to figure out what makes for adultery, and it is assumed and borne out by the literature, both in the secular and in the Christian world, that it's basically, both for men and women, a sin of opportunity. But for men, far more. It turns out that for men, the single greatest predictor is simply that. Just as this professor said, sheer opportunity. That's it. Just opportunity all by itself. By the way, there is a study here in my hand indicating to me that for men, one of the root causes is narcissism. We like to think we're the kind of person that just might be attractive to someone else. And so there are men who feed their narcissism by adultery. There are men who feed their feeling of power and empowerment by adultery. And there are those who just use any number of sexual and sinful kinds of games in order to get themselves into the context of adultery. For women, it turns out that it's a somewhat different experience. For women, adultery is often a matter of seeking to validate the value of the self. It's often a way of seeking something through the man. And again, that's borne out by the research. Women saying why they had affairs. There was something they wanted. They saw the sexual event as a way of getting to where they wanted. Men in adultery are seldom thinking about marriage and long-term commitment. Women are often thinking about that. It's a pattern. You don't have to know much from the Bible to detect that pattern. For that matter, if you've seen one of Shakespeare's plays, you've got it. If you've read any major work of literature, you pretty much have figured that out. If you've just read the newspaper, you watch what Hollywood puts out. That's something you can understand. And they've tapped into something that is real. And the difference is this. Out in the secular world, the entertainment may celebrate adultery, but it's interesting to see that the man and woman on the street really isn't. No one is arising to say what Tiger Woods did is not morally significant. I think that very fact is significant. On the other hand, most of the people around us simply are not putting the protections into place to keep them from committing the same sin. If not now, then in the future. But looking at it from a Christian perspective, we've got to understand what's at stake here. And the creation and honoring of those protections, the denial of that kind of opportunity, is a matter of our deep, sacred Christian responsibility. We'll be back with final thoughts in just a moment. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. All of this is really, really interesting, at least it is to me, because when you look at something like this, we're not just talking about this because it's in the news. We're talking about this because it should be a matter of our heartfelt concern. It's not just a matter of what the entertainment media and the conversarati out there are talking about. It's about what we consider to be of utmost importance. Brad Wilcox, a guest on this program, I mentioned him in the top segment in terms of an article he did in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend. In the massive study that he just released, The State of Our Unions, Marriage in America 2009, he makes this statement, quote, adultery is not on the rise among ordinary married couples in America, and ordinary Americans take a dimmer view of adultery than they did 40 years ago. This is a point worth underlining insofar as adultery is linked to markedly higher rates of marital unhappiness and divorce, end quote. Now, that's written in virtually perfect social science ease. In other words, there's a jargon there that tries to be very neutral and dispassionate, and I think there are rarely examples of how something so passionate can be described so dispassionately as to say simply that adultery is, quote, linked to markedly higher rates of marital unhappiness and divorce. Well, guess what? You don't need a scientific study to tell you that. But it is interesting what comes before that is that Americans are now taking, by their own report, a dimmer view of adultery than they did 40 years ago. You know, I think this is one of those situations in which moral lessons can be relearned by a culture or a society. The permissive generation of the 60s and the 70s, the swinging 60s as they were known, well, you're now looking at a kickback from that. You're now looking at a generation that experienced that or saw their parents experience that, and they're saying, I don't want any of that. And that's good news. It's not the gospel in terms of persons coming to have their sins forgiven. It is a matter of a culture at large coming to understand that sin is sin. And that's a good first step. That's a necessary first step. That's a good step in understanding that commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, is not just a helpful hint, is not just an antiquarian statement of moral sentiment. It is a command from our Creator. I have to end any conversation like this by saying we're not talking about this as if we're not sinners, talking about those who are. This is a conversation where only sinners are welcome. And the only difference is that there are those who've come by the grace and mercy of God to know the forgiveness of sins through Jesus Christ. Let me tell you, when I pray for Tiger Woods, I'm praying that this experience will so shake him to the core that he understands he is not self-sufficient and he needs a Savior. I pray there's someone to get the gospel to him. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you've been engaged in intelligent Christian conversation in the Albert Mueller Program. We'll meet you for more tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.